Well, this last week there have been reports that staff at number 10 Downing Street have been contacting the National Bullying Helpline. Someone's lost his cool, and others have been on the receiving end. And then there's the Chancellor, Alistair Darling, who spoke of the forces of hell unleashed against him after apparently upsetting number 10. People get angry. And then there's the Man United boss, Alex Ferguson, famous for the hairdryer treatment, to quote that fearsome, decibel-bursting rollicking dished out to players who underperform. People lose their temper, don't they? And it's not very pleasant if you happen to be on the receiving end. Now, of course, it does depend who is the one who gets angry. I remember one of my children lost it at the meal table. They went into orbit, but then they were only two and sitting in a high chair. So it was actually quite funny. But what if it's your boss or the head teacher or your dad or Alex Ferguson or Gordon Brown? Not so funny, is it, to feel their displeasure, to see their face, to witness, as it were, the crashing of a personality, and we can be left shaken by the whole experience. It's one thing for people to get angry, but it's nothing when they're angry with me. But that's just human anger. It's the anger of an equal. It's the anger of someone who will one day die. Who's scared of Stalin now? But what of the anger of God? The God who is holy, infinite, eternal, glorious. What of the anger of God? Moses thought long and hard about the anger of God. He said, "Who knows the power of your anger?" He's saying, who stops to think about the anger of God? Do you? Now, this message is not the hairdryer treatment, nor are we going to say that everything that can be said about the anger of God. But simply with our Bibles open, we're going to stop and we're going to have a think about the anger of God. And we have four things to say. And the first is this: God's anger. The prophet Nahum says this: who can stand before his indignation? Who can endure the fierceness of his anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and the rocks are thrown down by him. That's strong stuff, isn't it? The presence of an angry God is overwhelming. The power of his anger is irresistible. Now, why is God angry? Well, we need to say some things, very important things. First thing to say is this: God is not a tyrant. God is not a bully. God never lashes out. You never find God in a mood. In other words, his anger is not like human anger. If God is angry, the reasons are fair and just. In other words, he's right to be angry. The Bible calls it righteous anger. What's more, Nahum chapter 1 verse 3, we read, "The Lord is slow to anger." So if God is angry, it's with great reluctance. He's been pushed into it, provoked into it. Lamentations 3 verse 33, "He does not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men." It's almost as though anger is alien to his instincts. Because he's the God who's rich in mercy. He's the God who's mighty to save. He's the God who fills heaven with singing over one sinner who comes to repentance. This is the God who says, "I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live." And then he makes an appeal. He says, "Turn, turn from your evil ways, for why should you die?" And yet he is angry. Why? Now, many years ago, we lived a few doors down from a couple who were always angry. We used to call them the Angries. I can see them now just coming to the boil. I can hear them now, exploding with anger. But they never bothered me. Maybe one of the reasons was they were never angry with me, but it never bothered me because they were just the angries. They were always angry. The person whose anger I fear is the one who is rarely, if ever, angry. Because I know that for them to be angry, there must have been some extreme provocation. And so it is with God. God is angry because we have provoked him to anger. So what have we done? What have we done to make God angry? What have I done? Now, if you could travel at the speed of light, that's 186,000 miles per second. Think about that, 186,000 miles a second. Okay, if you could travel at the speed of light, you would pass the moon in 2 seconds. It'd take you 4 years to reach the nearest star. It'd take you 100,000 years to cross the galaxy. Another 2 million years to reach the next galaxy. And then another 20 million years, travelling at the speed of light, to reach the galaxy that's after that. And you've barely begun. Because another 100 billion galaxies beyond. Incredible, isn't it? The distances are off the scale. And yet, says the Bible, God measures that distance. God measures the universe with a span. To God, this universe is no bigger than the distance between my thumb and little finger. That's a span. That vast distance is no bigger to God than a span. That is how big God is. He holds the universe in his hand. That's not all. He also holds my breath in his hand, says the Bible. Does that make you feel safe? God is infinitely God. So if he's infinitely God, why don't I worship him? If God is so big, why in my life is God so small? If God holds the universe in his hand, why in my life is God so unimportant? And there are other things which are tiny, 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 which are so big and important. Yes? Oh, I couldn't live without my sport. Or television, or music, or career, or holidays, or boyfriend, girlfriend, nights out. But I can live without God. Do you see? In my life, something, someone has taken the place of God. And that's the fundamental sin of the human race. What's the first and greatest commandment? Commandment number one, you shall have no other gods before me, says God. But we say, well, I haven't got room for God in my life. I've got all these other things, and they take God's place. They come first. But if he is the real God, how can these other things take his place? Paul writes to the Romans. He says this, talking about the human race. He says, professing to be wise, we think we're so clever, we know, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore God gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. That's why God is angry. We've exchanged the God who made us for rubbish. Imagine it. I have no room in my life for God. Can you understand his anger? Well, maybe you can. You have a special friend. are, you think, got a really special friend here. But then you discover that your friend thinks more of money than they do of you. And that for them, this relationship is just a means of getting money out of you. A free meal, a free holiday. How do you feel? You feel angry, don't you? Or you love someone, and you think they love you, and it's a special relationship. You love them, they love you, and then you discover that sex means more to them than you do. And in fact, they see you and everyone else as a potential sex object. They don't love you at all. They're just after one thing. How do you feel? You feel angry, don't you? Or you strike up a great relationship with someone at work. And then you discover that they love power more than they think of you. And so when the promotion comes, what do? They stab you in the back to get what they want. How do you feel? You feel angry, don't you? Because it's not fair. It's not right. How can money or sex or power be more important than a fellow human being? How can those things be more important than me? How can those things take the place of what I thought was a special relationship? Exactly. So then, can you see why God is provoked? He made us. We belong to Him. He fashioned us. He gave us everything that we have. It all comes from Him. And then He comes and He speaks to us of love. He speaks to us of friendship. And He's worthy of all our devotion. He's God. And what do? We don't want to know. And other things, trashy things, empty things, take His place. And we say, I want them, but I don't want you, God. And if God gets in the way, then as near as we can do, we stab Him in the back to get what we want. Any surprise that God is angry? Do you see, we're idolaters. We've exchanged the real God for a false God. It's the fundamental sin of the human race. And of course, it's a sin from which all other sins flow. Because if you don't love God, then you don't love those who are made in God's image. You don't love your neighbour as yourself. And that's why the world is the mess that it is. No wonder God is angry. We've provoked the infinite God to wrath. We've done Him deliberate personal injury. Now then, your idolatry, something in the place of God, it may not bother you. But it bothers God. David commits adultery. Bathsheba finds she's pregnant. So to hush it all up, David arranges a murder, the murder of her husband. And if you look at it, the place is strewn with the physical, emotional, and social consequences of David's sin. But what does David say to God? He says, against you, you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight. When all is said and done, and he's had a man murdered, he's left a woman pregnant, he's ruined and spoiled everything around him, when all is said and done, really, he says, I have wronged God. Against you, you only, have I sinned. And that's the same for all of us. That's where our wrong really lies. Against God, God only, have we sinned and done these things. And that's why God is righteously angry. And it's a righteous anger that's personal. God comes to us face to face. It's not just that God is angry with the consequences of my sin, or that God is angry with my actions. God is actually angry with me. It's personal. And therefore, His righteous anger with me, it demands retribution, justice, punishment. Your idolatry may not bother you, but it bothers God. Which is why Psalm 50, God warns you. Sometimes you come across passages of the Bible and think, oof, What's strong? Who's God talking to? Says Psalm 50, he's talking to you. This is what he says. He says, you thought I was altogether like you. And we do, don't we? We think, well, God's just like me. As I treat other people, I can treat God like that. He's altogether like me. He's just as small as everybody else. You thought I was altogether like you. But I don't shrug my shoulders, says God. I will rebuke you and accuse you to your face. And if you've gone to sleep, and to you God's anger is just a bad dream, God, as it were, clicks his fingers and says, wake up. Because he then goes on to say, consider this, you who forget God, who don't think about my anger. Think about it, he says, or, this is what God says, I will tear you to pieces with none to rescue you. God's anger. Moving on much more quickly. Number two, God's anger can be seen now. That letter we just read, Romans, it says this. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. So it's saying now, God's anger is revealed from heaven. You think, well, what do you mean, revealed from heaven? Where? There's no burning sky, there's no lightning bolts. Where is this anger of God? You see God's anger, says the Bible, every day. Well, where? Well, listen. That's what it says. Therefore, listen to this. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions. A few verses later on. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind. You see the language that's used. It's talking about the anger of God, and in that context it says God gave them up. God gave them over. See what God's word is saying? It's saying this. If you exchange the real God for a false God, if our fundamental sin is idolatry, then God in his anger will give you over to every sin. If you don't want the light, then God in his anger says, well, okay, have the darkness. If you don't want God, and says, God, in his anger, I'll abandon you to the life that you do want. And what's the result? The result is we go further and further from God. We become less and less like God. We become ungodlike. In the Bible's language, we become ungodly. And what lies at the end of that road? Going further and further from God, becoming less and less like God, becoming more and more ungodly. At the end of that road lies judgment, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish on every soul of man who does evil. Here's a dog. He's a bad dog. Won't stop attacking cars. It's in his nature. So the owner has to keep the dog on the lead. But all the dog does on the lead is pull harder. It strains at the leash. And every attempt to restrain the dog is met with fury, uncontrolled snapping. Until one day the owner slips the lead off the dog, and the dog is free. Dog's never been so happy. And the dog goes sprinting up and down, running at cars, having a fantastic time, barking, biting, doing everything it loves to do until that awful thump. And the dog is dead. Been knocked over. Do you see? People strain at the leash. I don't want God. Why should God tell me what to do? And every time God tries to gently lead, there's uncontrolled snapping and biting. So in the end, God, in his anger, he simply slips the lead. He withdraws his restraint. That's why that language is used. Therefore, God gave them up. God gave them over. He said, okay, you don't want me, have what you do want. And people feel free. And they don't feel guilty. But already they're on a collision course with hell. And it's the unfolding of God's anger now. So people won't use their bodies to glorify God. Says God, well, use your body then as you please. Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves. Says God, do anything with anyone at any time. Just use your body. Do what you like with it. And if you don't want to have great and adoring thoughts about God, then says God, well, just think about what you like then. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind. And of course, as you think, so eventually you will live. Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, they're whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, the list goes on, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. It's all pretty standard behavior, isn't it? All the stuff that you see around you. And what it's saying is the unfolding of God's anger now. God's anger is revealed now. Where is it? It's in the home, at school, at college, at work, in the community, on the street, in the nation. It's in your life. You can see it now. Why do you get drunk and take drugs? Why do you click onto pornography? Why do you sleep with people? Why do you trash people behind their backs? Why do you resent the success of others? Why do you argue with parents? Why do you swear? Why don't you respect your teachers? Why do you boast? Why can't you say, I'm sorry? Why do you always think you're right? Why do you admire yourself? Why do you say, what about me? Why don't you care? Why are you unkind? Why is it that you won't talk to some people? Why can't you be trusted? Why don't you feel guilty? Why? It is because, as you just read in this letter, God has given you up. God has given you over. It's because God is angry with you now. Because having rejected him, he's simply giving you the freedom that you want. Because he knows that you'll use that freedom to destroy yourself. So we thought about God's anger. Thought about God's anger now. And here in the end of what we have to say, God's anger to come. John the Baptist said, flee from the wrath to come. Now, when I was a boy, I lived on a hill. At the bottom of the hill was a little corner shop called Primrose Stores. It sold everything. I used to run down the hill to Primrose's. If you ever run down a hill, especially when you're a kid, it's exhilarating, isn't it? I used to run down the hill, I used to get faster and faster and faster, but then a stop before the main road at the bottom. But sometimes that awful feeling, you're running so fast, I'm not going to be able to stop in time. My friend, God gives people over to what they want. That's his anger now. And it's exhilarating, isn't it? And you can go faster and faster until one day they can't stop and they crash headlong into hell. What of you? One day will you have that awful feeling, I can't stop. I can't stop. And it's too late. The writer of the Hebrews says it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. The wrath to come. Just turn with me to that reading we had in Revelation. As we said, it's a picture book, Revelation. And in chapter 16, we're given these startling pictures, you can read about them later, of the anger to come. There are seven bowls filled with the anger of God. But the scene begins in the temple in heaven. So chapter 15, verse 7, then one of the four living creatures gave to the seven angels seven golden bowls full of the wrath or the anger of God, who lives forever and ever. The temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power, and no one was able to enter the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were completed. And I heard a loud voice from the temple saying to the seven angels, go, pour out the bowls of the wrath of God on the earth. The temple is filled with smoke. The wrath of God is burning. God's anger fills the place. See what it's saying? God is revealing the glory. He's revealing the brightness of his anger. It's the anger to come. And the sight is overwhelming. So much so that even his children don't dare come near. The temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power. And no one was able to enter the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were completed. It's like a greatly loved father, and he's gentle and wise and good. But a great wrong has been done. And now he's filled with righteous anger. And we've never seen the father like this before. And his children stand in awe. And they know that this is the time to keep out of his way. And they're thankful that he's not angry with them. That's the picture. And then these plagues are poured out. It's the final unfolding of God's anger upon a wicked world. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 plagues. 6 plagues of God's anger. But we wait for the 7th plague. We've yet to see God's anger in all its fullness. We've yet to see the full, final expression of the anger of God, that which crowns his wrath. But now it comes. What is it? Well, we just pick up the end of it in verse 21 of chapter 16. And great hail from heaven fell upon men. Each hailstone was about the weight of a talent. That's about 50 kilos. About 100 weight. It's all imagery. It's all picture language. Great hail fell from heaven upon men. Each hailstone weighed about it. So it was about a talent. About the weight of a talent. Men blasphemed God. Because the plague of the hail, since that plague was exceedingly great. Do you catch the imagery? Through the long years of man's rebellion, God's anger, if you like, has been held back. It's been pent up. But now, finally, it explodes in this cosmic, cataclysmic, climactic 7th plague, where the wicked are buried beneath an avalanche of God's anger. And it's undiluted by blessing, unsoftened by mercy. As Moses says, who knows the power of your anger? Who stops to think about the anger of God? So God is angry. God is angry now. And we just had a little taste of that anger to come, buried alive under an avalanche of his wrath. So we come to point number 4. Is there a way out? And the answer is yes. I've been dying to tell you about this all evening. There is a way out. He is Jesus Christ. Here's a brilliant verse. 1 John chapter 4, verse 10. In this is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Propitiation is a big word, isn't it? It's no bigger than acceleration. We all know what acceleration means. So what does it mean? What does a propitiation mean? It's the act of removing God's anger. So, my friend, God is slow to anger. He takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked. On the contrary, says the Bible, God is in a hurry to save. He so loves helpless, hell-deserving sinners that what does he do? He sends his son, Jesus Christ. And what does Jesus come to do? He comes to take away his anger. Propitiation. And how does he do it? He goes to a cross where the sins of countless people who've offended God, they're put upon Jesus. And therefore God's anger is turned aside from them to fall upon Jesus. Propitiation. God's anger is turned aside so that it falls upon Christ. What love that Jesus, the innocent, holy Son of God, removes God's anger from the guilty by bearing that anger in himself. Wonderful, isn't it? Propitiation. Here's a wall. It's the wall of a dam. And every year the water level behind that wall rises. And now that water level is at the very rim of the wall. And maybe you can feel it, this great high wall, hundreds of feet high. And you can feel the pressure, can't you, of billions and billions of gallons of water held behind that wall. But it's just a picture of the infinite wrath of God. That infinite wrath stored up against the guilty, waiting to be released on Judgment Day. But you see, at Calvary, Jesus takes the sins of the many. And looking up, he sees the wall of the dam. God's anger waiting, pent up, stored up at the very rim. And now the hand of the Father breaks that wall, releasing his anger in an infinite torrent that sweeps over Christ. Can you imagine a man standing at the bottom of Niagara Falls? That's the sense of it, isn't it? And there is Jesus, bowed under the density and the weight and the torrent of God's anger as it pours over his head. You get a little sense of it. Sometimes you read some of the Psalms and it throws light into those moments. He says, I suffer your terrors. I am distraught. Your fierce wrath has gone over me. Your terrors have cut me off. They came around me all day long like water. They have engulfed me altogether. He's engulfed in the wrath of God. And there's no escape. But a moment comes when the last drop falls. And he says with a loud voice, it is finished. He has exhausted the full measure of God's anger against his people. So that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Till on that cross, as Jesus dies, the wrath of God was satisfied, for every sin on him was laid. Here in the death of Christ, I live. And that's wonderful news tonight. God is angry with me. And it's personal. And it's righteous anger. He's right to be angry with me. I've provoked him to his face. I've gone and done my own thing. I've put other gods in his place which are no gods. But he says to me tonight in the gospel, wrath is what you deserve. But I don't want you to perish. I couldn't put it more strongly, he says, in that I've given my son. What more could I give? I've given my son to bear that anger. that whoever comes to my Son should not perish, but can enjoy peace with me. And he invites you tonight, therefore, to come to Jesus Christ. Come to Jesus. Enjoy peace with God through the cross. If you like, stand where the wrath of God has been, and you'll be safe from the wrath to come. Do you want to escape the anger of God? Then you must come to Jesus Christ. There's no other way. Only he takes away the anger. So come. Surrender to him. Lord, have mercy upon me. But don't leave it another moment. God only guarantees you one day when you may find him. And that's today. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart. Don't leave it another moment. Not when Jesus tonight stands ready with open arms to save. Not when there is so much love in God. You don't have to perish. You can come to Christ. But if you perish, then know this. You will have destroyed yourself. Let's sing a hymn.